Now, welcome, Kate. I might ask you to start by introducing yourself and your position.
Okay, my name's Catherine Skate. I'm an occupational therapist and I'm employed as a vocational consultant in Western Sydney and the Nepean Blue Mountains local health districts.
Okay, so maybe if you could start by describing what it is that you're implementing. I understand it's a systematic review, is that correct?
Yes, it is. The model that we're implementing at Blacktown Mental Health Service in partnership with Wise Employment is based on the individual placement and support model of supported employment. There was a systematic review conducted in 1991 to look at models of supported employment, which showed it achieved 34% versus 12% in achieving open employment outcomes. IPS is a particular model of supported employment where an employment specialist from a disability employment service is integrated within a mental health team. Mm. Further to that research, Becker and Drake in the US, where the model's been developed, have showed through random controlled trials in updates in 2008 that approximately 61% of IPS participants achieve competitive employment versus 23% of vocational services.
Okay, great. And what practice or behaviour are you aiming to change and who's the target in terms of the staff?
Okay, well, probably first we just need to highlight a couple of the principles of IPS, one of which is that the employment programs determined by consumer choice. So that's quite different to the traditional way of looking at people as being work ready, and the other is the big structural change of having the employment program co-located or integrated with mental health. So with that in mind, we're aiming to get clinicians to make employment a priority in terms of recovery-focused mental health, and work in an integrated way with the employment service. So what that means is that clinicians at assessment and review routinely ask about employment. Exclusion or eligibility criteria are not assessed. So that's the principle of zero exclusion. So basically, if people want to do it, then they're referred.
And that point you're just making there is about the interviewing style or the things that people get asked?
Yeah, it's the questions they get asked. So routinely they would have a section in their intake assessment about vocational, so it can be education or employment. So that's the standard practice now. I guess we're also aiming to change attitudinal beliefs that people with mental illness can't be employed or they might require lots of preparation before they are ready. So clinicians are asked not to ask consumers to progress through a whole lot of pre-vocational type activities or make sure they're independent in their living skills if really the employment's their goal. So how they validate this is by referring straight away to an employment specialist. So that's another principle that people are referred rapidly to the employment specialist. In terms of how we're asking employment consultants or specialists, that's the term that's used within the IPS model, normally multiple staff might provide different phases of the employment program, whereas with IPS they take a vocational generalist approach where all phases of employment service delivery from assessment to post-placement support are provided by the one person. So this is so that people can build up rapport but also to make sure communication's consistent and there's not too many opportunities for misconstruing information.
So it's a big change in who does what and how much individuals versus teams.
Very much so. Employment services might have specialist marketers, special people to assess. So it is quite a big role change for those workers.
Mm. Okay, so I guess you're describing attitudinal changes, interviewing strategies that need to change and role changes. And the people that you're targeting, I understand, is about 14 staff, is that right?
There are 14 staff in the case management mental health team and probably about, there'd be three strategic key players from the employment service. So we have one employment specialist that works with the team, but we also have quite a lot of management involvement in the governance of the program.
Okay. And how did you know that there was an evidence practice gap in current practice with the team at Blacktown?
Okay, service-wide, and we did some direct consultation with mental health staff about their perceptions of current gaps in services. Did a review of current services New South Wales-wide, and also did a snapshot of people registered with the mental health service just to look at what educational employment status was at that time. The other thing that we did was a pre-implementation data audit specifically looking at that case management team. What we had found that was that data collection systems weren't really capturing educational and employment status, and those were the things we were interested in. So we developed a tool and did a baseline randomised data audit on 43 files 6 months prior to implementation. And the striking things that we noticed were that on the intake form, which is a New South Wales health form, income source had only been completed in less than a quarter of the cases, even though it's a mandatory requirement. Care plan modules, which are mandatory outcome measures, had only been completed in about 18% of cases, none of which had any documentation of vocational activity. And we managed to find one person working independently and one person participating in a disability employment program. So the baseline information was really difficult to gather and pinpoint.
But I guess you knew at that point you had, as you said, you had information from a range of different places about some of the problems. So once you knew what you were planning to do, what strategies or intervention did you use or are you using to change practice with the teams?
Okay, well, first of all, we had to get the executive on side. So what I did was target people who had some influence but who would be champions and support the implementation, and then proposed what we were going to do with some measurable outcomes and timeframes, so what we were hoping to achieve within those timeframes. So to do that, we set up what we called the VIG group, which was a vocational implementation group. And one of its objectives was to establish this IPS co-location within a community mental health team. We promoted the product of IPS by having some researchers from overseas, two Jeffs, one Jeff Shepherd from the UK and one Jeff Waghorn from Queensland, who have both had extensive experience implementing this model and talking about their research and practical clinical outcomes. We did education for the clinical teams. We had some specialist training in IPS and how to conduct fidelity reviews. It's actually monitored by a 125-point fidelity scale. We established some database reporting systems so that we could actually collect the information we wanted to report on. Gave feedback to the staff about the results of the audit. We also did progress updates and continue to do to the wider service about how successful it is and who's getting into jobs, because we want to expand the program.
But how often is that? How often would you give that information back to staff?
Back to staff. Within the case management team, we have a steering group. So we do quarterly progress reports, but we also provide that probably about every 6 months, just in bulletins and whatever promotional opportunities we can get. We have a local newsletter within health and things like that. Mm.
And when did the process start, just so we get an idea of the timeline?
It actually started almost a year ago. The 28th of February 2012, Barry, our employment specialist, started. So we've almost got 12 months worth of data.
Okay.
Yep. The other really important thing is having a service level agreement between health and the employment service, because that's the governance tool for our practice and make sure that we're doing the right thing and complying with fidelity. So that's actually signed off by the executives of both organisations.
It's like a contract.
It is a contract, and we can all be held to account for our responsibilities within that contract.
Yeah, and you mentioned that it has things like caseload size.
Yes.
Which is a fairly...
That's actually one of the principles within the model, yes. Mm. Yep.
Okay, so we've got education training, we've got feedback to staff, a number of different, and getting key people, champions on board, and lots of training. What barriers or challenges did you encounter, or have you ongoing barriers that you have to manage?
Look, I guess one of the biggest ones that we didn't really have any IT systems to capture that baseline data, so we had to build them ourselves, which I've done with the help of a research officer we have on staff. We're very lucky. I think one of the things that within the Australian context is, it's not a barrier, but it certainly adds a layer of complexity, is the Commonwealth State Disability Service Agreement, where health provides health services and the Commonwealth jurisdiction provides employment services. So actually, even speaking the same language sometimes is a difficulty there. So they have different interpretations of what an outcome is to maybe what health is. And even within the IPS model, an outcome can mean something different again. We didn't actually have any policies or procedures or templates in place for service level agreements like this, so we had to look to other places, Queensland and basically the UK, although they don't have that extra added layer of complexity. So that was all new territory that we had to explore. Some of the attitudes of staff, I guess, that people that with a mental illness can't work or working will be stressful and make their clients sick. So we had to, and the lack of knowledge about the model, so we had to talk a lot about where this had succeeded in other places, and look at past histories as well of where we had worked in the past. For example, CRS Specialist Services had actually worked with people and gotten people jobs in the past. So examples of where it's working now, but also where things had worked in the past. And the usual staff changes and shortages and comings and goings that are that part of any organisation we had to confront, I guess, and overcome.
And then get them up to speed with what you're doing.
Exactly, yeah.
What about things that enabled the change to go ahead?
I would say the biggest thing that's helped us to go ahead is the high level of acceptance and support of our executive and management staff based within the Blacktown Mental Health Service. They're willing to take risks, and that's something that's not often found in health. We also had a new case management team leader arrive about 2 weeks before the employment specialist, and luckily he's very recovery focused and sees IPS as an inherent part of his practice and what he wants his service to look like. We employed a VEET clinician after many battles for funding and established that, because the VEET clinician has clear responsibilities within the IPS model of service delivery around mental health support, but also monitoring and governance and data collection and education with the employment specialist. So those responsibilities within the service level agreement clearly fall within the duties of that person. That's often something that falls down. If the person who's been the IPS champion leaves, a lot of that stuff falls down. So we're lucky that we have got that person to carry that responsibility. And I'd also say passion, because I'm passionate about this stuff and the people on the team are really passionate about it too, and they see it as part of their ability to offer people opportunity for social inclusion, and they're willing to take risks and help people to do things that maybe they hadn't thought of doing.